Genius to download here on WGN. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Who's in Patty's chair? Mark Carmen and Jen Bosworth. All right, I'll take that. That's a good crew. All right, I might stick around. I'm not sticking around. I hate to sound like Rokan. That's kind of our running joke. Every time he feigns any interest in something that I have on the show, I say, you should stick around, Ro. And he goes, I wish I could.
I got a thing with a guy at the place. Yeah.
Scott Smith's in studio, our new media contributor here for the download. He's the editorial director over at Touch Vision. He's worked in pretty much every shop in Chicago. I guess you haven't been in the
Trib. I never made it to Crane's.
But you worked.
Technically, I worked for a Trib publication, right, for Chicago Magazine, so that counts. Checked that box.
Well, there you go. You still have some.
Right. I got somebody I can. If I get fired, I still got one more place I can go.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk the year in media, or as I think appropriate, the year in either startup media startup, or I think social justice and the issues surrounding protest have been a big part of the media. Maybe we start there with some of the national trends. Obviously, when we think about some of the storylines here in Chicago surrounding social media, Laquan McDonald comes to play, whether or not the media was going to air the video, whether or not we were going, you know, how social media played into it.
Right.
ABC got, I mean, it's amazing to me that ABC 7 got the Laquan McDonald video early,
mm-hmm,
and that forced the city to have an earlier press conference.
Right. I mean, I think they saw kind of how things were going. I mean, you saw the independent journalists like Brandon Smith, who had put a FOIA together, who had gone to sue them, one of the only media outlets in the city, not the only to request it, but the only to actually sue for it, had gotten it released. And obviously, it sounds like ABC 7 also got a hold of it as well.
Well, they just got someone just leaked them the video.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't do any work for it.
Right. Well, but you know what? That's journalism, right? That's you're cultivating sources.
Gowdy sitting up on his desk, and they're like, ding. Oh, what's in my email?
The guy team's calling. Yeah, right. No, but that's how you do it, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
That's the payoff of cultivating sources over time. It's kind of old school journalism, right?
And it was interesting because Brandon Smith and Jamie Calvin both stayed on that story when it kind of ebbed and flowed. I'll give Carol Marine a lot of credit.
She was on that for NBC Chicago, was on that story pretty much since day one, and she was kind of, you know, pushing that a lot. But I mean, you're right. Like, this was kind of social activism / journalism happening. I mean, from, you know, the folks in the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, some of whom were there on the beginning, to folks who were kind of ancillary to it, if you will. Guys like Deray McKesson and Sean King are two of the most visible, who they know journalists both, you know, in Chicago and outside of Chicago look to their Twitter feeds to see what starts to get traction and decide what they're going to cover. So, I mean, this is a different way of sourcing news coverage now, where people are looking specifically
different gatekeepers. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, you've got that. We saw a lot of this kind of hitting in Mizzou, where you saw this push-pull between activists and journalists. Activists saying, we want to be able to tell this story, but we actually don't want any journalists
that was
here
fascinating.
To tell this
that,
story.
That, to me, I would argue that could be the number one story in media this year. It was a woman, the professor, who said, we don't want the media. I need some muscle over here. We need the media out of here. But the concept of saying, we don't want you to tell our story.
Right.
And that was an interesting sort of head scratcher for people who are protesting or wanted promotion. We don't want you to tell our story.
And I think you saw the development of that in a much less confrontational way, but with the Black Youth Project here in Chicago, which said that they were one of the few activist groups here in Chicago that was not going to meet with the mayor ahead of the release of the Laquan McDonald video, because they saw themselves able to have a more powerful position by refusing to meet with him than actually meeting with him. And that was true. That began... they began to be the, for many people who had never heard of them before, they brought focus onto themselves and were able to actually direct a lot of coverage through social media, saying, we're going to be here, we're going to start off here, we're going to be, you know, proceeding down this way. You know, many people saw closing of, what is it, Roosevelt and State, mm-hmm, in previous protests. That began to be a little bit of an epicenter. And, you know, the night of the release of that video, the juxtaposition of the protests on Michigan Avenue with Mayor Emanuel lighting the tree in Millennium Park, like as a media moment, there's the power of that. It was almost unequaled. Yeah. And that's because you have a group of activists here in Chicago who are incredibly organized, who know, like, there are people who are going to say, oh, these people are just showing up, whatever. We're working on a couple longer feature stories at Touch Vision about the activist work here in Chicago. And it is amazing how much they are directing these groups and saying, okay, this is how it's going to go. You know, women and children should be over here. The sign is over here. The megaphone is going to be here. And by the way, you know, we want you to be voting, and here's when you can vote. I mean, there is a lot of direction happening, and a lot of that story is told through social and told through digital. And obviously the mainstream media is an amplifier of that, but they are now going to social media to see what the story
is. I find it interesting, especially in the case at the University of Missouri, that was not the first time we've heard that. We've seen it more and more often that social justice groups, people who are going to be the center of a story, say, I don't want the media here. And the reason that is because far too often the media tells a pretty crappy story. They actually do more harm than good.
And that's the shadow side of being an amplifier, right? Like, they know that, like, this woman that's the professor, you know, that is, that's not, you know, that's not her best day. But she is now the face of a certain kind of activist. And, you know, you accidentally, you know, we saw it with some of the protests here, you know, you accidentally, you know, fall in the wrong direction. You get a photo taken at a certain angle. You know, you look like the face of a particular kind of aggression of a movement.
And you could say that the same about police officers.
Exactly.
Or you say it about anything, that the media has become such a lowly, that people don't have the greatest expectation of the media.
Right.
And it's because of those situations where we in the media are like, got the shot. We're out. Well, that's not exactly what was happening. Doesn't matter. Put it on the front page. It's going to sell tickets.
For a number of reasons, and many of them not particularly malicious, the stories of conflict are stories that the media both can tell very well and are stories that are worth telling. And without a conflict, there's not really much news happening in most cases. But in the drive for that, we end up getting stories that are maybe driven by a sort of ginned up conflict. And nobody wants to be the face of that. And that's where you start to see in Mizzou these calls for a safe space where people want to demonstrate publicly, but don't necessarily want to have the amplification of that message. Now, I think you and I talked about this before, and my comment there was, you want to make sure that if you are, you know, engaging in a particular activity that is just, it should stand up in the light of day. It should stand up in the light of media coverage. And so I think that is, you know, you saw the second day of the Mizzou coverage where they realized, hey, look, we're going to actually lose the story here if we don't develop a better relationship with the media, and things kind of changed pretty quickly.
I think that the media can hold grudges.
You don't think.
And so that we don't want you here didn't go well, and the media was like, let's make
that
this
viral. That became the story, right?
Yeah,
that started to become the story, and they realized the story is now getting away from us. The story of activism, the story of these, you know, that's a story, frankly, that hasn't been really told, is this group of football players. You know, we don't really know a lot of the names behind, and we don't know a lot about what kind of led to them. A lot of the things that led up to Mizzou kind of got buried underneath this protesters versus media story. And that is one of the dangers where if you kind of keep the media at an arm's length, you don't end up allowing yourself to have full control over the
story. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, let's continue the conversation. There are two things I would like to talk about locally. Media trends. The landscape here in Chicago got smaller.
Yeah.
We saw that we're losing things like Gapersbach, but also we're seeing, you know, shops like the Tribune, buyouts, layoffs, things like that. Doesn't look like that's going to change. But also when it comes to technology, a lot of different ways to tell stories, but also we're seeing Facebook and Twitter try different things like live Periscope, things like that, of that nature. And what drives me, which I find interesting, and I forgot the name of, you might remember the name of the kind of what they call the video now that just plays.
The autoplay video.
Yeah, but it's embedded. Stuff. It's so good. Like when I'm scrolling down on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, not as much, but those two, it plays and I'm okay with it. there's no audio yet until I click on it.
Right.
Like, it's just like, it's not that load up, like, take over your screen kind of thing that was happening 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if the, the play, like, just takes over. And, But this is, like, in it. I mean, they are doing leaps and bounds in terms of video production on those social media platforms. Talk about all that coming up here with Scott Smith. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Wow, Christmas on Michigan Avenue, Scott Smith. What do you think, man? Isn't it cool? I kind of talked about it at the beginning of the night. I was like, you know, I spent most of my time here in Chicago, 20-plus years, avoiding Michigan Avenue at Christmas time.
But you're protected here. You've got, like, your own little glass enclosure here, you know, on one hand.
I get
hand,
to go out. I went out for a little bit. I went two blocks down.
I mean, look, this is a gorgeous-looking city, and downtown's particularly gorgeous. So you could be in worse places, honestly.
I feel like I'm in a John Hughes movie.
Yeah.
Like, if this was the WGN radio, like, rocking around, and I was the main guy, and you were Molly Ringwald.
I'm Molly Ringwald, the listener? Okay.
That's
fine. I don't care.
You kind of look like my...
I got it. No, from... Right. Kind of, I got it. No, the short hair. Sure.
It's kind of the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. You're like Jake Ryan then in this scenario?
I guess I'm
I just
want to
know who...
I'm like a Judd Nelson slash Jake Ryan slash... Macaulay Culkin slash
Uncle Buck.
Yeah, John Candy. Right in there. It's
somewhere in that amalgam
on Michigan Avenue.
I got it.
A little
perfect
chase. All right, we're talking media, the year in media here with Scott Smith, the editorial director at Touch Vision, as well as he served this city well at different institutions in town. We're talking about the year in media, and we went over the idea of the national trends as sort of social activism, which also touches Chicago, Laquan McDonald. The other angle to me is we kind of, you know, talked about it was the design stuff. I mean, the interesting aspects about how we're getting our media.
You know, it used to be that the phone experience was a lot cleaner and a lot faster. It was very stripped down. You know, sites created their own sort of mobile, like they loaded faster, all that kind of thing. And we're kind of messing that up. You know, we're now junking up the mobile experience with the same crappy popover ads that the, you know, desktop version had. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people have experienced, you know, trying to go to a news site. And these ad networks will run ads that are redirecting you to the app store before you even get to the page you're trying to load.
I'm not a Sun-Times hater. I'm not. I actually am agnostic, but I also like the Sun-Times because I feel like it's in my blood.
You root for the Sun-Times, right?
I root
like
for
I
the Sun-Times.
A lot of people do.
And Jim, all the guys there, and you know, at any rate, that when I click on a Sun-Times article, man, they bounce you out as fast as they can, every which way they can on your phone. It's unbelievable. I can never read the actual article.
And I think that is the most extreme example of something that a lot of sites are doing, which is you get websites that have a lot of, as they call, stakeholders, and you're constantly bombarded with other things to pay attention to other than the thing that you are actually there to do, which is to read a story. So that has led a lot of social networks, which are directing a lot of news traffic, to try to keep people inside a little bit of a walled garden as much as possible. So Facebook is launching these instant articles now. Mm-hmm. If you see a little lightning bolt next to an article, you know that if you click on it, you're loading a very sort of text-driven version of that article. It doesn't actually send you to no ads for the most part, although there is some ad capabilities on it. And publishers are doing that because they get to keep some of the ad revenue off of that. But it loads faster. But it is still in Facebook. The traffic is not going to the publisher, so they're losing some of that traffic. But publishers are in this state now where they're just kind of willing to try anything, and they are so desperate not to lose a relationship with Facebook that they're sort of like, okay, you know, like, go ahead and twist my arm, whatever you want to do, like... Well, you know, and now right now it's mostly, you know, big major publishers that are doing some of this. It remains to be seen next year how this rolls out to some of the smaller publishers. And obviously, publishers that are working with instant articles and have a good relationship with Facebook, well, those are going to be higher up in the algorithm. You're going to be more likely to see those as opposed to some of the publishers who are not doing that and are just directing you to their websites.
Here's my prediction for 30 years, I said in 50 years, Christmas tradition is going to be tornadoes. It's going to be, but I'd say 50 years in media, Facebook, they're going to rename Facebook to the news.
It's just going to be news?
It's just be news, and then we'll forget that there ever was a Facebook, and it'll just be news.
Well, it's been interesting, the Apple News app, which is the thing that people were really like kind of worried about, you don't hear that much about? I don't know. It's not personal. I've downloaded it. I've looked at it myself, but it is not. You ever, it's the, this is the thing about a lot of tech companies is people always freak out, like, you know, there was Medium and they were going to be a publishing company and that hasn't really worked out. And there are a lot of tech companies that try to get into the business of media publishing. It's a really hard business to be in. A content business is really difficult. And I think Apple is sort of finding some of that. Like, it's not as easy to get people to adopt new news and reading habits as they might have expected. And I think this feels like, to me, 2010 all over again, when Apple was going to revolutionize the way that, you know, it was going to be all about subscriptions and magazines and newspapers were going to have people to subscribe to the digital editions. And, you know, right. That didn't really work out either. So, you know, Apple's foothold in the media business, I think, still remains to be seen despite its reach and largesse.
Well, I think that what Facebook has done with an Instagram to an extent, which is owned by Facebook, but with the video, with the ability to scroll on my phone and for video to start and for me to not have to mess around with it. You know, at first everyone's like, this is such a nuisance. This is destruction, this is intrusive. Now I'm like, it is very intuitive.
Yeah, now it's like, oh, look at this Vine. You know?
Vine's still behind. Vine, you got to press a couple
buttons.
That's true. Facebook plays the video for you while you're going. If you click on it, I mean, if you touch it with your thumb, it'll give you the audio and you're on your way. But it starts up. That viral video of the monkey scratching his butt starts up.
So the shadow side of that is, what do you see when you can see anything autoplaying? And I think we saw this during the Virginia shooter story, where that person had shot two people who worked for Virginia News Stories. And all of a sudden, jumping into your news feed alongside pictures of baby photos and links to news stories is
alive.
The shooting of two people live in your feed. We've seen it with ISIS, you know, beheading videos as well. And so this conversation about like kind of news trauma and has kind of added to, it's mostly happening for people who actually work in news, but it is adding to the conversation that you experience in social as a regular person. There's all these psychological things that are wrapped up in the experience of viewing social media. And now you have the psychological experience of seeing autoplay videos of
killings. It's a yin and the yang,
things.
Man.
So, I guess that monkey sniffing his butt is funny. I got to be honest. I'm not going to lie.
At the end of the day, we messed ourselves up.
Yeah.
That's essentially what we've done. Scott Smith, stick around after the news. We'll talk about the local media trends here, the big contracting of staff, but also digitized the unionization of what? WBEZ, WTTW, The Reader, others. So we'll talk about the movements and the trends here locally in media. Scott Smith with me. Stay with us. It is a download here on WGN Radio. I get really excited there. Sorry. I know we're at the halfway point. I saw all the great people walking past on Michigan Avenue.
You got to
give
them a show.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Christmas!
You got to stop that guy looking at his phone to pay attention. And he's not, he's sort of waving. I don't know. He's taking a picture. I'm not sure. He's looking at the tree.
So much Christmas cheer in studio. Scott Smith. We're doing the year in review. Local media is next. Most of the year in review because I guess I should have said this at the beginning of the show tonight, but this is my last show until January. So coming up next week, there'll be the download will still be on. I know Matt's in. Matt Bubala's in Friday. I don't know who's in throughout the week, but they'll all be great.
They're all good people.
They're all good people.
Yeah.
Let's get to the local stuff because the big stories to me was the sort of the buyouts at the at the Tribune. I thought that losing John Hillkovich and Kevin Pang,
Mark Caro, Don Turner Trice, and I'm gonna there's a ton of people.
Yeah,
but like I mean,
amazing journalists,
some pretty like marquee columnists and marquee feature people too. You know, so I mean, there's I think it was overall in Tribune Media, and this is not just Chicago but elsewhere, is 77% of the total workforce, but they weren't alone, right? I mean, we saw plenty of departures from the Sun-Times as they went. Some people went from full-time to part-time hours and then kind of eventually left. Craig Newman, obviously, a pretty high-profile departure there. But again, you know, there's a huge, you know, readers' long-form stuff now goes online, doesn't go in the print. Mick Dumke's their big political writer, now going over to the Sun-Times. Today's Chicago Woman, the 33-year print magazine, and online, that folded. Gaper's Block, you talked to Andrew the other day, you know, that is now, you know, so online is not immune from some of this kind of stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways in which this is all kinds of audiences, all kinds of different publications. Daily Herald and Sun-Times are now doing a content sharing partnership.
Scott, let me ask you why. I mean, is it obvious? Is the question stupid it's just bottom lines. People are like, okay, well, advertising is shrinking, so we need to limit the kind of media that's out there because we need to make as much money as possible.
I think there's a number of things. You know, the online advertising, which was at least what they would refer to as digital times, is now contracting a lot. I mean, everything from I think ad blockers have gotten a lot of press, but the effect on them has been minimal. But ad fraud is pretty significant. The number of, you know, the metrics that you use to say the number of people who are checking your stuff out, the ads online, it's really hard for a lot of publishers to guarantee that those are not like robots or spiders crawling the web.
We got a trillion hits.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but that's, but when you pay for that traffic, you know, the number of, so we talked before about the terrible design of websites. A lot of that becomes a little bit of a web shell game. You know, we were like, I'm trying to click on this one story and I have to click through three other sites in order to get to it. I mean, that's one thing. We have not yet figured out how to take print subscribers or digital readers and convert them into print subscribers in a lot of cases. But I mean, there are some bright sides in local media. I don't want to say it's all doom and gloom, although honestly, this has probably been the year that I've been the most pessimistic and I'm usually more optimistic than not. But you look at things like, okay, Time Out Chicago has now returned in a quarterly print edition. There are a couple of new publications that are really more advertiser-driven than anything else. There's a women-driven publication meant to take the place of Today's Chicago Woman called Forward, FWD, colon. There's Chicago Lee, which is yet another print publication serving the North Shore. A lot of these seem like small potatoes, but they're really going to be harbingers of... That's the kind of low-hanging fruit, and if that stuff can start to return, maybe there's an opportunity for more of a subscription-driven thing. And so, you know, your question in the beginning is how do we, you know, what is the reasons for some of this? I think it's the same kind of reasons that have been happening over the last few years, but a lot of what's been happening online that was somewhat able to fill the gaps is also now starting to contract.
So I guess that's why one of the big stories of 2015 had to be that the different shops, the non-union shops, unionized, because the content makers can see the writing on the wall and they want some protections in sort of just mass layoff.
I think that it was mass layoffs, I think, is certainly a factor, but it also is the idea that with a lot of online shops, particularly ones that are kind of startup driven, you've got folks who are not entirely clear about what the nature of their job is, that it could kind of change really quickly. They want some of that protection. Obviously, the kinds of benefits that you get in a lot of the online shops are not as good as what they've been in the past. And so they're looking for the same kind of worker protections that some of the print brethren have had. You know, they're, you know, newspaper unions are, you know, all over the place. But, you know, we've seen locally WBEZ unionizing, the Reader unionizing, WTTW, Chicago Tonight producers are unionizing. They're following in the steps of Gawker, you know, Huffington Post, I believe, once they're union recognized, Al Jazeera Plus, a lot of different news organizations now are unionizing because they see that a lot of the workers are being seen as a lot more disposable. Digital used to be a lot more specialized. And even the people that were writing of it, you know, you had to have this, but now it's become a lot more commodified. And that, I think, is why you're seeing a lot of the rising units.
So, okay, so quickly, as look into your crystal ball, what are going to be the trends and the themes of 2016?
I mean, I think you're going to start to see more new startups. Again, this is another bright side. So you look, you talk to Mike from AlderTrack. Obviously, he is having a go at a subscription-based business. He's developing a very niche model, and I think you'll start to see more of that. Obviously, the place I work, TouchVision, is trying to do something different with video-driven news and entertainment. You've got Rivet. We talked about the Invisible Institute, mm-hmm. Jamie Calvin, which helped break the Laquan McDonald video shooting. City Bureau is a sort of training ground startup for different kinds of journalists and working in partnership with other journalism shops to actually develop new talent. Catalyst Chicago is really a great journalism organization that helped break the story of Barbara Bird Bennett and the malfeasance
involved there.
To be
fair, that's not even close to a startup, though, man. That's been around for like 20
true,
years.
True enough. And I guess
like, it's funny because working in public radio for a long time, I feel like Catalyst was like... Like,
that's true.
Elder States, here come Catalyst down the hill.
I guess it's more of that scrappy,
behind
the startup.
They're not a mainstream, and they were able to break mainstream stories.
And you've got like and I was talking with Mike earlier today, and he said, you know, like the line between a media company, like a news company, and a media company, and technology company has been blurred. So you've got everything. Newser's been here a while. DNA Info, obviously, is still kind of in a startup mode. Rookie Magazine, obviously, is kind of established now, but certainly a kind of got that scrappy kind of idea. So you're going to start to see a lot more blurring of the lines between media and technology. But I think you're going to continue to see more burgeoning startups here, and people kind of there isn't the investment is starting to come back in a lot of those kinds of companies. And you know, companies like Curiosity, which is I think owned by Discover. Discovery Channel. Mm-hmm. I think some of those established media companies are going to be starting their own kind of disruptive startups because they figure, look, if somebody is going to put us out of business, we want it to be ourselves and not somebody else.
That's the mantra for 2016. Let's put ourselves out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Smith, editorial director at TouchVision and our new media contributor here in The Download. Merry Christmas, man.
Merry Christmas,
Thanks
man.
So
Happy
much.
New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. We'll see you in January.
Good to see you.